Batter Up. Hello, everyone. We are live. Welcome back to A Pod of Their Own. This is episode 123 of A Pod of Their Own, I believe. I have to bring up the show notes, but I believe it is episode 123
right.
of A Pod of Their Own. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined this week by my lovely co-host, Linda Serovich. Hello, Linda.
Hello, Allison.
And we are also joined by a friend of the pod, astrophysicist and baseball construction extraordinaire, Dr. Meredith Wills. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
We are good. We are good. So we are having you back on the show today because obviously, as folks may be aware, something is once again up with the 2022 baseballs. whenever something's up with the baseballs, Meredith went up on the show and we have a little show and tell.
I'm waiting for a season off.
Yeah, never. Sorry.
Man, If you had told me back in 2018 that this would be an annual thing, I would never have believed. Actually, and off season, you know, because postseason. So.
Yep.
It never ends.
Never a day off.
No, apparently not.
But in more specific, we now have mounting evidence that the ball is, quote, dead again. Offense is down across the league, even compared to, obviously it's cold in April, and so offense is usually down in April, but even when we compare to other Aprils, offense is down, and the ball has high, the 2022 ball has higher drag, which Rob Arthur of Baseball Prospectus already showed, and there was a piece in The Athletic recently that showed other data, like the barrels aren't traveling as far, etc. So Meredith, what do you make of this? And have you gotten your hands on any 2022 baseballs yet?
Well, there is this, which will come up in my, let's do it this way. There is this, which will come up in my walk-off wins. I am holding up a baseball for everybody who's not on video. So I had assumed we would see something, if only because the study that I did for 2021 and that Bradford Davis published in Insider, it really looked like we were going to see a lot of leftover 2021 baseballs for this season. The fact that they used 2020s during the 2021 season, I didn't really start seeing baseballs that were specifically made for 2021 until July, basically the All-Star break. They just didn't start sending them to teams. So if you only take a half a season, you know, where you're actually using the balls for that season, you've got an awful lot left over, not to mention the fact that they do make them for AAA as well. And they had an entire season of 2020s left over for AAA. So they did start using 2021s maybe in August. And that was only because they were easier to spot because they never stamped them with, before they would have been International League or PCL, these were straight stamped Major League Baseball, which at first I thought was kind of a weird, not fluke, but I thought it was unusual until every single baseball after a particular period of time was MLB. And it does look like they're just continuing to do that. I don't think they're bothering to stamp them anything else this season, at least not what I've seen so far. But, so yeah, with all the leftovers, that would mean that we've got, we can't not have two baseballs. Just unless they're going to leave a half a million baseballs sitting in inventory, which I really can't picture. There have to be two. And that ball that was the new design that MLB told GMs about back in February of 2021, it was designed to be dead. That was the point. The looser winding on the inside, the analogy that I'll use is it's like underinflating a basketball. So hence it's more dead off the bat. That was the goal. But especially now that they're using humidors, they had, when they tested those baseballs, they did it under, you know, constant temperature and constant humidity conditions. So they were basically tested in a lab and only in a lab. But at least if you have the humidor, that then makes that part consistent, or I should say storage consistent, before they put them in games. So the idea that the humidor is having a material impact in a way that should make the ball, should, I should say, behave kind of like it was intended, you know, yeah, deader ball makes sense. Unfortunately, so does all of the other weirdness.
So did teams start implementing the humidor not knowing there would be a new baseball that would like be wildly affected by it?
Well, the problem, I mean, they knew, we knew the humidors were coming in, or the teams knew. You know, there was really no question that was going to happen. It may even be that because of the way that those new dead baseballs were tested, that that was part of the push to get the humidor in sooner, because there was an Athletic article in The Athletic last year that sort of addressed the fact that everything had been constant temperature and humidity for testing. So how do you make, you know, assuming that that's the problem, how do you make it so that those balls that were originally designed to be dead actually start behaving as advertised? Maybe you set it up so that those baseballs are going into games having, you know, been basically reverted to, call it, lab conditions. The problem is that the dead ball, I mean, I don't think the problem is the dead balls. Had they sort of been born in a humidor, if that makes sense, it might be okay. What I think is going on is that nobody would have expected what we're seeing, because it doesn't make sense that it's from the balls like being in the humidor per se, but that they are getting into the humidor drier, and then as they're gaining moisture again, that's actually, I think, what's causing the problems. It's the you know, equalizing, it's the rehumidifying or whatever that for this new kind of baseball should basically be causing pretty much everything I've heard pitchers talk about. So
yeah, speaking of things that pitchers are talking about, pitchers, I've already been talking about this baseball a lot. And
well, Mets pitchers in particular.
Mets pitchers in particular. So as
for
a
people
Mets
watching
podcast,
video, my cat is trying really hard to help.
So. Cat making an appearance on the podcast is.
Oh, he will. He'll make
a well-known
appearances.
A well-known entity in a pod of their own. Both Linda both Linda and I have cats. So, you know,
and a given for mine.
But, you know, as a Mets podcast, you know, we have to mention the fact that it's specifically Mets pitchers that are talking about the baseball. You know, as folks who listen to this podcast are well aware, the Mets have been hit by more pitches than any other team in baseball by a fair margin. And that kind of those frustrations sort of boiled over in the Mets Cardinals series recently, where there was a benches clearing incident, after which Chris Bassitt, who was the starter in that game, said, quote, "The MLB has a very big problem with the baseballs. They are bad. Everyone knows it. Every pitcher in the league knows it. MLB doesn't give a damn about it. They don't care. We have told them our problems with them. They don't care." And he also went on to note that there's no consistency among the baseballs being used this season. He would say, like, one inning, they're really bad. And the next inning, they'll be fine again. And then the next inning, they're bad. And Bassitt's not the only one saying this. James McCann, among others, who has said the same thing. So, what do you make of the pitchers saying this? Do you think, like, what do you think that the effect that it's having on the pitchers? And B, you know, I know we already alluded to this, but what does this say about the certainty of there being hashtag two baseballs again?
Well, the descriptions that the pitchers are coming up with, and frankly, across the board, every player that I've heard descriptions, they're all not just reasonable, but I did some, they were pretty small studies, so it's almost more like exempla for moving forward. Knowing that there were two baseballs, and in particular, Rob Arthur and Ben Lindbergh had a really interesting article about spring training in 2021 and how the two kinds of baseballs really showed up. I created DIY humidors. I don't know if we talked about this on the last one.
No, and, I don't think so.
Because I wanted to see how those, you know, basically what kind of differences were showing up with the new dead balls and the normal ones. What I found was, you know, maybe not what I expected. And I had like two dozen, in fact, that had started as spring training balls from Arizona. And I did a bunch of, you know, I started with humidity. I jacked them up to like a jungle, what I called a jungle humidity, just like to kind of, it was almost like to equalize everything out. I then quite literally put the baseballs in the oven to dry them out quickly. It worked. You know, leave it open. It was great. How are you going to do that? Like, I was in Wisconsin. It's not like I can get it back to Arizona.
I was going to say, you basically recreated Arizona.
I have pictures. And I then, you know, I think I left them in there like 4 weeks or something, but I checked at least one. I mean, it was on a regular basis to see like how the balls were changing. What was interesting was, when, and I should point out, the balls, they started out as dry, then jungle conditions, then back, dried out, particularly the new dead baseballs got much smaller physically. Like, I had never run into baseballs that actually were too small to meet spec, as it were.
Wow.
Like, that was, these were the very first, I didn't even think it was possible, basically.
Wow.
And had high seams, you know, so as far as I can tell, okay, demo baseball, holding baseball. What looks like, and this is kind of an across the board thing, once you kind of look at expanding and shrinking, is the, where the covers are versus where the seams are just expands and shrinks differently. So when the whole ball is shrinking, the seams just, it's not like they're going to squish in. They're a different shape. They've got, you know, they're going to stay up a little higher and everything else is going to shrink around them. So I ended up with slightly higher seams, but an overall smaller ball. It's like the cross sections between the seams were smaller. And what then happened though, was taking them to jungle conditions and then back to dry, when they started expanding again, the seams ended up even higher than when I was looking at the balls when they were dried out. Hmm. And it, what I think was happening there was that, whose hair frizzes here when it gets humid?
Mine.
Okay. So your hair frizzes when you get it humid.
Yeah, me and humidity don't mix.
It turns out that wool yarn, or wool in general, but you know, the yarn on the inside is wool. I mean, I think there's a wool poly blend for one of them, but even that would do this. It's actually sensitive to humidity. And so when it gets drier, like your hair, it actually does, it loses structural integrity. So it kind of flattens out. But the balls are designed so that the covers press in, which this will, by the way, ask about this again, because this makes a really good segue when we do talk about the Olympic ball.
Okay.
So the covers press in, which means that when you have that, you know, losing structural integrity, when the yarn flattens, once again, the ball shrinks because the covers are pressing in. However, when you then add the humidity back, the yarn does expand again, but there's no reason for it to expand spherically. Why would it? It's going to expand more in places that push in less.
Mm, yeah.
There happens to be this great little break in the covers along the seams. The seams just aren't going to press in as much. It's not dissimilar from how lace thickness should end up allowing higher seams to happen.
Right.
You basically get the same kind of effect. So taking a dead ball that's drier at all and putting in a humidor and adding humidity, you're going to end up with a ball that has even higher seams
how
more drag. And this is not something that I think was, I mean, it was not something that was considered. In fact, Alan Nathan had a really, it was great seeing feedback on this, on, there was an article in The Athletic that, you know, Saras and Ken Rosenthal did about, you know, the humidor and how it might be affecting the balls. And as far as I know, Alan was somebody who was privy to the original testing. And he thought it was fascinating that that could be an effect, because everything he'd done had just been in the lab, and they hadn't considered the idea that drying them out and then, you know, adding moisture back would actually impact how the physical shape of the ball and therefore the drag. On top of that, and, you know, this is where, like, you know, ultimately looking, I'm going to learn more about it. There've been comments from pitchers about, discarding balls because of having dents. Will Middlebrooks put something out about that he said, he talked about one instance where, you know, it was a number of balls that a pitcher had discarded because it had dents.
Like it was warped almost.
Well, I'm referring to a baseball again for people who can't see.
Yeah.
As part of that re-expansion, it's not like they put baseballs in egg crates. They're actually sitting flat on shelves. They're in boxes. So I think when they're re-expanding, the bottom is ending up flat.
Is body. Not expanding anywhere because it exactly. has
Exactly. Gravity is a force, normal force. You guys know what I'm talking about. And so I think what we're seeing when
science majors know
that'll feel like a dent, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and so it's so everything, and even to the point of, like, you know, when Chris Bassett's talking about all the balls feeling different, or Brian McKenna, frankly, I have yet to talk to a single player who does not say all the balls feel different, which it doesn't actually require two baseballs. Not that there aren't, but it doesn't require two baseballs, because if every single one of those balls is expanding such that it ends up as a different shape, plus flat spotting, et cetera, yeah, they'll all feel different. I'm not really sure how to speak to Chris Bassett's inning by inning thing, partly because I think it might just be that, you know, clearly most of them are pitchable, or you'd have a lot more balls being thrown out. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I can see that forming an impression that it might be seen as an inning by inning thing. I mean, there might be more to it, but frankly, I just can't see that the umpire, or, you know, even, you know, any given team would know, like, okay, yeah, I'm going to give, say, my home team pitcher good balls one inning, then bad balls the next. I mean, presumably if the team knew, they give their home pitcher all the good balls and their home pitcher all the bad balls, right? Why would you switch back and forth? So I think it might be an impression. Although, again, I would love more information. I'd love to, if you guys know him, I'd love to chat.
Chris Bassett, hello.
Chris Bassett, if you're out there, or if someone who knows Chris Bassett is out there. We don't know Chris Bassett personally, but we can maybe try.
I'm sure he's watching right now.
Can maybe try our folks we do know at the Mets, but. Sure. Do you, like, dumb question about, like, them sitting flat? Are they all sitting in the exact same orientation when they're flat, or are they all, like, on different sides sitting flat?
You know what? I'm not sure. They'll be kind of mixed up. The way that balls are put in, I have pictures, but I'll have to dig them out. The way that balls are put into the actual game ball boxes, they're in these boxes of a dozen each. Each of them is wrapped in tissue paper very, very gently. And which means, by the way, that if you take a ball out, I have yet to figure out how one would, say, put the tissue paper back on such that it looks like it wasn't taken out before. You can usually tell when a box has been, you know, invaded or not. So it's not like even the idea of someone conspiratorially removing the balls and then secretly putting back new ones, really hard to do. Not impossible, but that's like an amazing amount of forethought. Within that, it probably just depends on who's loading up the box, frankly.
How much of a perfectionist.
If it were me, I would probably be putting them all in at the same orientation, but that's not a requirement.
Right.
And to some extent, it's also just frankly going to depend on the ball. It's going to depend on, I mean, the leather covers, the weight of the leather covers tended to be a very, very, it was one of the most highly variable parts of construction. But starting in 2021, they made that much more uniform. So like, you know, when I talk about, in fact, anyone wants to try this, when I did the studies, you know, and again, up to, I guess, last season, taking the covers off to figure out which were the dead balls and which were kind of the normal or live ones was, I'd have to take the covers off because the covers themselves would be anywhere from like 14 to 20 something grams. And the tolerance is actually only 7 grams, which means that, you know, you couldn't tell if it was going to, you know, if it was going to be a ball that, you know, was one kind or the other, because the covers just varied too much. The covers now seem to be much more uniform, which means that I can, you know, when I get a baseball, like if I had a random baseball that was from starting 2021 production, so starting in July of 2021, July of 2020, I should say, the weights for the live balls, which are heavier versus dead, you pretty much can tell the difference. You know, if it's between like 100, I tend to do this stuff in grams, which is between 142 and 149 grams. That's the limits within the rules. If it's less than 144 grams, it's a lighter one. Maybe less than 145. If it's more than 145 and a half, 146, it's dead. Or excuse me, it's other way around. If it's light, it's dead. If it's heavy, it's live. I always get that mix. I want it to be the other way and it's not. Point being, except for kind of, you know, around 145, that's where the kind of overlap, but there's not really that much. So like, you know, if anybody catches a foul ball or batting practice ball, which by the way, if it doesn't say practice or have a Sharpie on it, it's a game ball. It's almost certainly a game ball. There's no reason it wouldn't be. Find a kitchen scale, take it home. If it's showing up as one end or the other, you probably already know which ball it is, even before you take off the covers. So it makes life a lot easier that way. But I think I lost the initial question there. Sorry.
it was mostly about like what you make of Chris Bassett's comments about the the different about like what about MLB having seemingly no control over assuming incompetence rather than malice, but like having no control over.
Well,
like,
the construction of the ball, like the lack of testing is I find it actually funny slash, I mean, yeah, I don't know, not funny, haha, but the stated goal of that dead baseball was to make, it's interesting, the phrasing they used was interesting because people will talk about it being more centered and they seem to think it has to do with like where the physical pill is. Now, more centered just means that for the range over which the coefficient of restitution, basically the bounciness of the ball, they wanted that to be in a tighter range, closer to the center of that, you know, of that range. So it has nothing to do with the physical center. It just has to do with the number. The point being, they wanted something more consistent off the bat. What they've ended up with is the least consistent baseball they've ever made.
Yeah, of course. Yep. Well, when he says the balls are bad, does he mean the raised seams that you were mentioning? Does that give them less? Because he was answering this in response.
Oh,
to
no, it's man, it's worse than that. I mean, the and again, every player I've talked to has some variation on this. The balls aren't just flat spotted; they're physically soft.
Oh,
you know, spoiler alert, this one is, it feels soft, even to me, and I'm not a pitcher. And particularly coming out of the humidor, you know, I've heard descriptions of, you know, guys who feel like they can basically change the shape of the ball with their fingers.
By like squeezing it? Oh,
by
God. By
squeezing it or by moving stuff around.
It's a stress ball.
Well, but yeah, basically, yeah, think of it as a baseball is stress ball, yeah. Or again, the flat spotting. I've heard, hitters refer to coming off the bat as mush. And I don't think that's an exaggeration. I mean, I think that's really just a good description. There's the grip is wrong. You know, when guys talk about the grip being a problem, everybody thinks of that because of 2019 and the balls were slick.
Yeah.
Grip is also a problem if it's basically also a stress ball, but you don't know how much of a stress ball it's going to be. You know, I have to wonder, hit by pitches are up. There's absolutely, was it Britt put this out with Eno? I think there were the two wrote. There was an article, another Athletic article, where they were talking about increased hit by pitches. And they're right. They have been going up. I do have to wonder, though, about, first of all, there just seems to be a lot more what almost feels like unintentional headhunting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is what the Mets have been happening.
Yeah. Oh, man, it scares me to death to watch that. Jeez. But I have to wonder what it is about having a ball that's basically too squishy or squished, or misshapen such that it has, because a pitcher might not pick up where the flat spot is. It might depend on how he holds the ball. I mean, like, let's say, you've got it, you're holding two of the seams we'll do a four seam fastball. And it happens to be on a side where they just don't bother to check. They could be throwing a ball that has a flat spot, not realizing it has a flat spot. Hence, it breaks completely differently.
Yeah.
It's not even just about the way that they're gripping the ball and how it feels in the hand. It's like how it, if there's like a physical like deformation of the ball, it's going to like break differently in the air.
Yep. Yep. And that's actually what I've started watching for, like, when you have somebody where they're hit or where it's clearly a pitch that's gotten away from the pitcher or a phrase that looks like that's probably what's happened. They'll show the replay. I look at the catcher. Usually the catcher has a rough idea, at least of the direction that ball is going to break, or they wouldn't have called it there. Maybe it's high, maybe it's low, but if you've got the catcher setting up on one side of the plate entirely, like if he's going low and away and it comes up high and inside, that's probably not what was meant.
Yeah.
No?
Yeah, because I'm not missing like 4 feet. You're not just missing your spot by like 6 inches. You're missing your spot by like 4 feet.
If you're coming in inside or if you're coming in high, but it's roughly where you want it to go. But when I've seen some, and it's not even necessarily like that it's guys getting hit. Occasionally I'm seeing where it's, it's like if you're paying attention. Okay, yeah, it was a ball, but the catcher really had to move to make sure that wasn't a wild pitch. Mm-hmm. Even though it was like, for instance, let's say you've got a lefty it would have been to righty, but, I noticed those ones too. It's not like die hard. It's just that you have to like see something that,
And unfortunately also baseball is now banned the sticky stuff at the same time. So could it be a mixture of both that this is happening or one having an effect on the other?
Well, that's a good question because sticky stuff is designed to improve grip. Basically, if a ball isn't I shouldn't say improve grip. It's like traction. It's designed to improve traction. So if you have a ball that's already squishy, if anything, it might almost be like an over sticky stuff thing. It
might be worse. Yeah.
Right. Like I'm not sure sticky stuff is going to fix this problem. Even if it like suddenly came back.
Yeah.
You might end up with increased spin rate, but frankly, if you had increased spin rate with these balls, I think you might actually be killing people.
Yeah. True.
I'm
not sure. What we have, I think, is that we're hearing descriptions from the pitchers that are actually entirely accurate, but we're putting them into sort of boxes or interpretations that we have been familiar with in the past.
Right.
So the idea of different, and I was doing this at first too, you know, different baseballs. Does that mean there are two kinds of baseballs? There will have, even if there aren't right now, even if like every ball that's being used is one of these dead balls, they will have to at some point start using live balls because they don't have enough of the dead ones for an entire season. They got to show up.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm not, that's almost like, you know, it becomes a beside the point. But when, you know, like Bob Nightingale's articles, are they still using two different baseballs? That's a really good question. However, I do think when pitchers talk about having different baseballs, I don't think it's the same thing as one kind versus another. I mean, if you remember last year, the pitchers couldn't tell them apart. So I'm not really sure that, you know, they wouldn't, I still can't tell them apart. Although again, they'd be better than me. But I think it's that you have the dead balls in the humidors is probably what's doing it. And therefore every single ball is different from every single other ball. Hence different, you know, it's not binary.
Yeah.
And also
the inconsistency.
Grip. People talk about grip, but grip doesn't necessarily mean too slick.
Yeah. And another issue that pitchers had reported in the past, again, like perhaps thinking about this too much in a previous mindset, but I wonder how these different baseballs are affecting this, is like in the past when you had these balls with the seams that were higher, it was causing a lot of blisters, like pitcher blisters. And I wonder like how this like squishy stress ball weird with super high seams weirdness will like affect that, if at all.
Have you guys heard anything about like actual blister reports?
Nope.
The only thing was some
this year, I don't think.
Glasnow last year kind of alluded to his Tommy John, that it was putting more stress.
That was because of the sticky stuff, though.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, because I actually talked to somebody yesterday who specifically said, yeah, we should be looking for blisters. And I was like, I'm not sure exactly. No. You'd think by now we would have heard, you know, even in somebody would have had said something. You know,
yeah,
we would have had some, you know,
because they definitely did it in what, 2019, I think.
2017.
Yeah, okay. 2017 was like the year of the blister. Like every pitcher got a blister from the ball.
Yeah.
Aaron Sanchez actually started for the Nats and pitched quite a good game the other night.
Oh,
it was 14-4 Nats Giants.
Oh yeah, that game. 14, yeah. The Nats were 14.
You guys were watching a no-hitter, so don't worry.
Yeah, we were. Which had a combined no-hitter, which was cool.
Yeah. Well, somebody we owe the baseballs to giving us another no-hitter.
Yeah, thank you, Dead Baseballs.
So, like I mentioned before, the Olympics apparently had good baseballs. So, are those not major league? Like, where did these baseballs come from?
Well, okay. Show and tell.
Yay!
Shut me up before. Apologies for people who are not watching the video, but we actually have some pretty cool stuff. So you'll just have to, Alice and Linda, just react accordingly.
Yes, yes.
So the Olympic baseballs, so I'm holding up a ball right now. It says WBSC 540 on it. These are a company made by a company called SSK Corporation. So there's a label on there. It says SSK Corporation made in Sri Lanka.
Mm-hmm.
This does not say Olympics on it, but this is the baseball that was used. This is the same kind. So if you know where to look, you can actually buy these in game boxes by the dozen. I tracked them.
Nice.
And the SSK Corp is a Japanese company, makes stuff in Sri Lanka, kind of how Rawlings is an American company making stuff in Costa Rica. It is not the same baseball that the NPB uses. It's not the Japanese.
Okay. Baseball. I was going to ask that.
That's made by Mizuno.
Okay.
And it's even packaged very differently. Like those will, you know, this was in, they do have them in like, you know, a plastic wrap, but not much beyond that. The NPB balls are physically in foil and then wrapped. I do have ones actually that are also in plastic, but I think those are both legit. The foil I know-ish. The reason that NPB balls are in foil is because they are pre-tacked, whereas these, the Olympic balls actually are not. and were not. It's that the, which also explains they were rubbed up. In fact, they might've even been rubbed up with Lena Blackburn mud, but they were rubbed up during the Olympics, which wouldn't make sense for pre-tacking, you know, one or the other. But the construction is very, very different. By the way, as far as I know, this is a dedicated factory in Sri Lanka, the same way there's a dedicated factory in Costa Rica. If you have balls for NCAA or the minors or pretty much anywhere else, there are much larger factories in like China or Vietnam, or I think Cambodia is the other one. I think those are the countries. Hopefully I got this right. But the factory in Sri Lanka is just a small dedicated factory that just does balls for the UBSC and they're for Olympic, or excuse me, they're for international competition. So here's the cool demo. The way that balls are made for, actually Major League Minor, Rawlings baseballs, let's say, are you've got those wound layers of yarn. And then the leather covers are, you know, they're on there basically to keep the ball round. Mm-hmm. The pressure from the covers is what's keeping the ball round. They're also made in such a way where the reason that they're all, you know, the same is that the layers are wound on winding machines that have a weight trip. So when you finish winding a layer, the machine shuts itself off automatically once that yarn layer gets to a certain weight. It's cut. You have the whoever's working the winding machines moves it to the next one, and for all the layers like that. As far as I can tell, the balls for SSK Corp, the Olympic balls, don't use a weight trip, but they do use a size trip. So I'm almost picturing something where it's like, you've kind of got two plates maybe, and it's winding, winding, winding until the plates get far enough apart, and that's what shuts it down.
Oh.
Because the weights do vary. The sizes really don't. It's the reverse of what you have for Rawlings. But, and okay, so I have my partially taken apart Olympic ball here. The laces are elsewhere. They're around. Oh, here we go. I just, you had a show, you know, red laces. They're boring. They're just laces. Look, red laces.
Red laces.
So taking the covers off here, there is what's interesting with this. So you can see the center, it's still that kind of thread wound center.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The difference is this feels like it has some, almost like epoxy on it. I mean, I don't know if you can, let's see if I can get snare near enough. Can you hear it tapping?
Oh, it's like hard. And like, yeah, like yep. You can hear the little tapping.
Yeah. That would never happen with a Rawlings ball. It's also round on its own. So it's like the roundness of the ball is pure, like it's defined by the interior. It's has nothing to do with the covers. The covers
are
like an afterthought. What that means, the leather then for the covers, the way I describe it, it feels like glove leather. Mm. When I take the cover off, I should have grabbed one. When I take the cover off of a Rawlings ball, the glue is holding it down and it really puckers. And once those puckers are in there, they never go away. Mm. On the other hand, and here I'll try to really mess this one up. So I don't know if you can you see that there's kind of like texture on there?
Yeah.
So let's see how this one is. Yeah. And again, texture. So because it's kind of like glove leather, literally, this was so cool. Put it on, smooth it down real nice.
And it just stays there.
And it's not just that it stays, because it's tacky anyway. Like it makes sense that there would be it makes sense that you'd have put this on. Right setup. You know, the covers are going to have to stay in place because otherwise you couldn't stitch them closed. But it's more that, like, literally smoothing with my fingers, the leather is pliable enough that all of that texture
becomes gone.
Disappears. Wow.
And and what you end up with is it has a slightly squishier feel, but it's shallow. It's the best. I don't know how a pitcher would describe it, but me knowing what the inside is like, it's like the squishiness only goes down a little bit, but even without being rubbed up, the grip is better than a pearl for the majors. So as opposed to this ball, which this is squishy in a way that clearly goes deeper than the covers. So, yeah, so I'm not surprised at all that guys liked this ball better. Yeah. I mean, it's also another thing that's interesting. And again, I should have grabbed a major league ball. If you can see where the thread is, you know, there's like sections where they're kind of all going the same direction.
Yeah, they're like there's like sections of three and then a cross hatches.
Right.
Yeah.
This is very clear. This is the sort of a winding machine that it's almost like, it strikes me as like the spherical version of like a knitting ball winder.
Yeah. It looks exactly like
right.
Yeah.
That's like it has to be some kind of machine that's like turning it in a way but that's like really systematic.
It's like, yeah, it's as like one, two, three, turn. Rawlings one, ones two, work, three, turn.
Which are not like that at all.
Right.
So the winding machines that they're using are much more advanced than the stuff that's being used in Costa Rica.
Interesting.
So just the entire process, as far as I can tell, is better. So when they say it's a better ball, yeah, I would argue it's a better ball.
So do the Olympics have like a different like international standard for the ball or...
Well, as far as I know, the specs, I have yet to see anything for like the physical specs on a baseball, which are still insanely loose. I mean, it's just, you know, it has to be between 5 and 5.25 ounces. It has to be between 9 and 9.25 inches circumference. It has to have contrasting colored laces and be made of horsehide or cowhide, you know, just the various kind of very basic descriptions. I have yet to see anything that for any international that is not that as well, which kind of makes sense because, you know, if you really are making so many baseballs in, say, China for a bunch of different kinds of leagues, it probably makes sense to just have the same kind of ball everywhere. So, this one, you know, this would still fit Rawlings specs. Like right. Or the official rule specs. There, it's not anything that's out of that, you know. But
I have a question.
Sure.
Please. What do you think would happen to those baseballs if you put them in a humidor?
That is a good question. I have no idea actually, because I don't know how the epoxy would behave.
Yeah.
One thing though that I am curious about, and I'm trying to get this tested. Is that hardness, I think, probably only makes sense for baseball that is played kind of like how we play Major League Baseball, in that I can't picture these baseballs responding well to being hit more than once or twice. I think they'll basically break.
Right. Right.
So I'm not really sure, like, you know, this is like a really good ball for a sport where they're only going to use it for like four pitches. Right.
Yeah.
Because then you will get to that misshapen thing. And so I can see this being ideal for Major League Baseball, but you know, NCAA, not so much.
Right. And so. There's always
even BP, that wouldn't last very long.
No.
Right. And there's always the, like, how do these react to being hit by an aluminum bat versus a wood bat too. Yep.
I'm still trying to get, you know, I've reached out to people and it's kind of fun. It's like, hi, here's these baseballs. I really need you to ding them up for me and send them back.
Beat up my baseballs. Please beat up my baseballs.
Please.
Well, it's funny. Cause it's like, in some cases, guys don't seem to have the guts to do that because I don't mean that in a bad way, but it's like, I've only sent them a few. And so they don't want to ding up the baseballs because they only have a few, you know, it's like, I'll just order more or something. It's okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm assuming I can still get them where I got them.
I'm very curious if you like can get your hands on some more Olympic baseballs and put them in your homemade like humidor. I just am curious what would happen to them.
Actually, I don't, where I am right now, I do not, I'd have to build another one. Although they're not, it's not actually that hard. It's kind of, it was kind of fun to you know, let's see. I love doing this. The humidor required a 25 gallon or something, you know, think about like a sealable pet food container is what I used. And then I, you know, and then got little things with like, you know, the temperature, humidity, stick on kind of deals. Control the humidity using, I basically took some like Tupperware plastic, you know, kind of cheapo containers and put sponges in those to, you know, you just check the humidity often enough to see if stuff needs to go up and down or stuff happens to go up and down. And I also got those, like, I love it. The kind of humidity regulators that you use to grow pot.
Yeah.
I wonder if it was similar to when we raised baby chicks at work. Because we had...
Might be like, the same thing. I just know that the ones that I got on Amazon, it was hard to figure out like the point. And then you went and you looked at the comments and everything was like pot growing. The pictures. So it's like, yeah, you know, if somebody checks my Amazon, I'm using it for, I promise I'm using it for baseballs. And meanwhile, my dad's like, you know, the smell might give it away. He loved it. No.
Now I'm like imagining the police like barging in your door, like, all right, retract your Amazon history. We know what you have in here. It's just like all these baseballs like sitting in these Tupperwares. And you're like, what?
Yeah. And actually, it just to get even weirder with the DIY, the to make the shelves on which they flat spotted, because it's not like you can slide stuff in, you sort of have to put them in, you know, and then you put a removable shelf on top. Plastic needlepoint mesh. And then I took a whole bunch of like old hangers from the dry cleaners, like the good sturdy ones, straightened them out, cut them and like taped them along the edge with duct tape and across the center so that they stayed flat.
Oh my God.
And I'm just, awesome. I'm like, yeah, this is so MacGyver. I love that stuff.
It's great. Yeah. We love it.
But it worked. Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
I mean, which, and so the thing is like, in fact, I could do it. It's just, I don't have any like coat hangers from dry. I'd have to like crash a dry cleaning place or something because I don't actually have those coat hangers. So I do my own stuff at home. So.
Yeah. Yeah. That's my assignment to any enterprising person out there who might be watching or listening to this is, Do a humidor and figure out what happens to the Olympic baseballs in it. I want to know.
Well, you know, at some point I can do it. I just
might be a while.
There's a lot going on right now.
Yeah,
with the baseballs. So I'll get to it
with the actual baseballs and being used.
Yeah,
in
I was
going to
say like I'll deal with the major league ones first, and then we'll figure it out.
Do you think Major League Baseball will ever like go in that direction, or are they just too sold to Rawlings?
Well, maybe a better question is how come Rawlings hasn't already gone in that direction?
Yeah. Right.
I mean, I've got baseballs going, I literally, you know, I've looked at baseballs going as far back as like, you know, early 90s, late 80s, and the construction's the same. They really haven't changed the basics. So if they haven't done that in, you know, 30 plus years, it would require a major overhaul, but it just clearly is not something that they've been willing to do.
Yeah.
And so it does mean that, you know, I'm not sure. For a long time in there, Rawlings had the rhetoric of making the best baseballs in the world. I'm not sure they say that anymore. which, you know, is frankly is smart, you know, especially after the Olympic balls and stuff, you know, it's not really hard to demonstrate that these are better made.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway, we do want to say to everyone listening out there, send Meredith your 2022 baseballs. If you do that and give us proof that you've done that, then we have raffle prizes. So we can give out prizes.
Yes. Yes,
so please, if you send Meredith a baseball, like show us, like, I don't know, a picture of you at the post office or like your receipt.
Actually,
from the tracking number.
Well, no, what I would like is when you send the baseball, batting practice is fine. Bullpen is fine. Something where it would have been on the field, okay. Basically. Even if it's stamp practice, just but not, don't buy it as a memorabilia thing. That turns out to be a real problem. where you got it and the date then that you got it. So like, you know, it's a BP ball from, you know, this particular Mets game versus whatever. And in fact, if it is BP, if you can tell me if it's home versus away BP, that does make a difference, because generally teams, and probably more so because of the humidors, teams bring their own balls for practice.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'll absolutely, you know, when I've gotten balls for BP, if it's away BP, you know, whatever team happens to, you know, if I then get home baseballs from their park, they're the same batches. So clearly they're being pulled from the same place. Mm-hmm. It looks like they're being pulled from the same place, I should say.
Right. That makes sense.
And it also then means that, frankly, I can get information on baseballs from parks that, you know, I might not be able to get as many otherwise.
Yeah. So send Meredith your baseballs. And if you do, we will automatically enter you for drawing for fun prizes. So please send her baseballs that you get. If you get a foul ball at a game, if you get a BP ball at a game, if they're warming up in the bullpen and someone tosses you a ball, get it to Meredith.
And I've all of those have been great sources.
Yep. And let us know if you've done that, and then we can enter you into a drawing for fun prizes. Because we want to.
Of that poor guy. Well, was it during the Reds game where he went to get it and he like dropped the ball and then he spilled his beer over his girlfriend?
Oh no! Or you
so not only did. Or you'd be like that guy. He didn't get the ball and his girl. Oh, but he caught, the other one caught it. Yeah.
Yeah. Or you can be like the guy who had a baby and caught the baseball in one hand and he was literally bottle feeding the baby with the other hand.
Awesome.
Bottle feeding a baby and he caught the baseball. Baby was still like sucking away on the bottle, didn't notice a single
so chill.
Thing. So chill. And that was a hero move. So yeah.
They gave the baby a jersey for that too.
Oh, they did? That's
why they entered the baby with a jersey. Yeah.
Okay. We love that.
Awesome.
Yeah. So send Meredith your baseballs. But in the meantime, we will finish the show this week with walk-off wins, where each of us talks about something that is making us happy this week, baseball related or otherwise. Dr. Meredith Wills, what is your walk-off win?
Well, my walk-off win is, in fact, the baseball I've been using as a demo. I went to my first Giants game of the season on Friday. While you guys were watching the Mets do their no-hitter,
yeah.
I was watching the Nats-Giants game and was there with friends I hadn't seen in a while. And, you know, we're talking about doing this stuff and, you know, the discussion of foul balls comes up. It's like, yeah, you know, I'm always trying to get foul balls. And Nelson Cruz hits his foul ball, fifth pitch of his at bat, I guess. And it kind of goes, we're in the field level right under kind of that lip where,
right.
You know, sometimes balls will bounce off and come down.
Bounce off it and come down too.
And, you know, and we could see that it had bounced, but I didn't really think anything of it because it like kind of, it went over my head and then bounced and I figured nothing. And I turn around and my friend says, here. And I went, what? I thought he was faking me out. I kid you not. I refused to believe at first that happened because the moment before he had basically been like, oh yeah, so people just catch you foul balls and give them to you. As if it was like a normal thing.
And easy.
This is the first time this has ever happened where someone has caught a foul ball sort of as if it was a normal thing, handed it to me right there saying, hi, have fun, learn something from this.
Like you've conjured it.
Like. It was like it felt like part of this narrative, as you know, sort of the you know, the culmination of the story that we'd already been talking during the
end. That's great.
Incredible.
It's almost like the universe just like provided in that
and
moment.
Strange and fabulous. Yeah.
That's really great.
Wait, who won?
Oh, this was the Nats winning 14-4.
14-4
to win. Yeah.
Yeah.
With a lot of home runs, actually.
Wow. Impressive.
Rare, many, many home run game in this early season.
That's a rare occurrence to this year.
Yeah, it was weird. It was fun.
Yeah. So Linda Cervich, what is your walk-off win for this week?
We probably have the same walk-off win.
Yeah, walk-off wins will be quick because we have the same one.
Yep. Where we also went to our first baseball game of the year. But
it was not my first baseball game, but.
Oh, it was mine. Oh yeah, because you went to the Nationals game, right?
And
yeah.
And I went to a Mets game. I went to opening weekend, the Saturday game.
Oh, okay.
I've been to two Saturday losses at Citi Field now, which if you do the math on how often the Mets have lost this year, is actually pretty bad odds for me.
Well, in which case, just don't go that often.
I know, yeah. Right? I know.
Allison's to blame.
No, it's okay. They won when I went at Nats Park, and I'm going at Nats Park again next week. So, but they won the game I went to at Nats Park. They've lost both the games I went to at Citi Field. So I guess I just can't go back to Citi Field.
You're banned from Citi Field, I guess.
Yep, I'm banned from Citi Field.
In 98, when I was out in grad school in Montana, and it's long before, you know, you could watch baseball like nationally on any regular basis. Every single game that I happened to catch of the Yankees, they were losing. It took until like I was drowned in grad school. I was only sort of half paying attention, and it was probably August before I realized how good they were.
Because it's like they must be bad. Every time I turn them on, they're losing.
So it's like, you know,
literally
so, yeah,
the
so
98
same kind
Yankees.
Of thing. Same kind of thing.
Sorry. But it was so fun being back at Citi Field. I saw the Tom Seaver statue. We met Shay.
Which was the best part. Shay is Mets puppy, Meredith, if you're not aware.
I've seen pictures, yeah.
Many teams are getting puppies now, and Shay is the Mets puppy, and we got to
the Pirates or the other one?
Yeah, the Pirates.
Oakland just has their feral cats, which I think is lovely.
And so does Colorado, too.
Is Colorado with feral cats?
Yeah, that's the one that had him run on this field.
Just the one famous
one
that ran on
the
field.
As opposed to the population of feral cats.
There is actually a population of feral cats in Oakland.
Oh, yeah, no, it was fully taken over the stadium. Throwaway write-up. That just like went viral out here was fabulous.
It's partly, because more cats show because... up to the games than people now.
Than people.
I was at the game yesterday, which did break another record. It kind of felt like, I swear, I showed up at the BART station. It was completely empty. I went on to the bridge across from the BART station. There were actually A's staff there because they've got like wheelchairs and things. I asked them, I'm like, is there actually a game? Did I get the date wrong? They're like, no, it's a game.
Wow.
It was, I get into the park and it's still it's only 45 minutes before our first pitch because they don't open the gates till like an hour ahead of time now, which is nuts. And there was like so few people in the stands. I mean, what came to mind was I felt like I was in Langoliers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Feel like you're at a spring training game or something.
Yeah, that's
Oh no, I've never been to a spring training game that had this few people.
Yeah, I was going to say spring training's not. It's like it's
even
like,
even the backfield seemed to have more fans.
Yeah, or like even like indie ball. I don't know.
Oh, I've definitely been to indie ball games with a lot more fans.
Yeah. It's like
no question.
It's so sad.
So we got to meet Shay. We got to meet Bradford. I'd never met Bradford.
The first time we ever met Bradford in real life.
We're finally after seeing him on Zoom for so long. So it was nice. It was nice, like, even though they lost, and I actually had a really good time meeting Shay, meeting other, you know, Bradford, meeting other Mets fans, and is having a puppy available is like a great marketing strategy because it makes your day infinitely better.
So where does he like just hang out at the park or where is he?
Yeah, they walk him around.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he was just trotting through and I was like, yay, oh my God. Some poor Allison was in the bathroom.
I know. So the funny part about it. So like I did get to meet the dog, but. So I go to use the restroom. I come back and Linda and Maggie like scream at me simultaneously, "You miss Shay!" And I was like, "What?" And so I literally took off down the concourse to like try to chase the dog. It was unsuccessful. I couldn't find where the dog was. And so I was like so upset. I was like, "I can't believe during the 2 minutes I was in the bathroom, you guys met the dog." And then when we went to go to, after we were like done eating, we went to go to our seats and the dog was still like hanging out like near our section, like the entrance to our section. So I was like, "Hey, I get to meet the dog after."
It looks like if we want cool things to happen, you just need to not be there. Is that what you're saying?
I know exactly. Yeah. I'm a curse. I'm a blight.
Yeah. or you could or it's an inverse good luck charm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just gotta walk away.
I can think of knew someone where if we wanted Bernie Williams to get a hit, we kicked him out of or a home run, we kicked him out of the room, and it seemed to work most of the time.
There you go. And my walk-off win is the same as Linda's. So, you know, that is that is the show. So you can go to amazingavenue.com, check out all of our fantastic content. We have, you know, game threads every day, game recaps, analysis, you know, all you could ever ask for. You can follow Amazing Avenue on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. Meredith Wills, where can people find you and your work on the internet?
Basically Twitter. So it's my account is Baseball Astrophysics, which is at BBL underscore astrophysics without the I. So probably just easier to click on the link. But yes. Yeah, that's me.
And we will put her handle in the show notes and yep, everything yep. So you guys can follow.
And yes, I am. I hate to say I am always in need of baseballs.
Yep.
Probably in perpetuity.
Yep.
I will die with a baseball still in my hand, half unlaced.
Yeah. Poetry.
Maybe Manfred will be
gone. Baseball for my cold dead fingers.
Yeah. send Meredith your baseballs. You can find her on Twitter. So if you have a baseball for her, you can reach out to her there. We are also on Twitter. I am at Petite PhD. Where are you, Linda?
At Linda Sarovich.
You can subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts from Amazing Avenue Audio. It brings you the entire suite of podcasts. Ooh, and before we sign off, I have a very important announcement live on the show. Our Dollars for Dingers fundraising event, raffle event has been set for September 17th. It will be at Ebbs at City Field. So get excited, guys. We are back at City Field for Dollars for Dingers 2022. We will be at Ebbs. We're so excited. We already have so many fantastic prizes, raffle prizes lined up for you guys for Dollars for Dingers. We cannot wait. And hopefully the Mets will still be good this year by September, unlike past years. Yeah. And it'll be like even more exciting. So September 17th, mark your calendars. Dollars for Dingers 2022, be there or be square.
And it's a Gary Cohen bobblehead giveaway night.
It
so
is.
No
it
reason
is.
Not to be there.
At City Field, it is Gary Cohen bobblehead day. So you should go, because if you have tickets to the game, you'll be able to go to the fundraiser in the afternoon and then trot on off to the game, hopefully with a prize in tow that you've won at our raffle. Wouldn't that be so fabulous? So yeah, Dollars for Dingers 2022, September 17th. Get excited, folks. We're so excited about it. And we can't wait to have you there. So yeah, that does it for the show this week. Let's go Mets. And don't forget, there is no crying in podcasting. We will see you all very, very soon. And how do I end this Facebook Live? Everyone gets this really fantastic content here where I figure out how to stop live stream. Bye, everybody.